cancel culture is not Rozzy saying something on the podcast and being canceled. Cancel culture is SB 129. Cancel culture is banning of books. Cancel culture is saying that slaves were no longer, weren't slaves, they were interns. Cancel culture is historical. I can care less if a comedian gets canceled. We're canceling history. What up, what up, what up, what up? It's Three Brothers No Sense, your favorite barbershop style podcast. I'm Tavares Ferguson, a.k.a. Ferg, everybody's favorite bad guy. Join my co-hosts, Buff and Rozzy. Fellas, happy Women's Month.
Happy Women's Month.
Tell them what's on your mind.
We've brought up a couple of times how DEI... diversity, equity, inclusion has been under attack. And I just want to highlight that some more to where we talked about the whole affirmative action thing and how schools can't use race. There's a Northern Virginia school here in my area that has found a way around it. And they think that this will be the new way to go forward, possibly. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court refused to rule on it. But basically what the school did, they had some parents group that, so the school got rid of their entry tests and their entry fee because they had such a high amount of Asian representation, very low amount of Latino and African-American representation. So they got rid of this particular test. A parents group sued them and said that it was anti-Asian, went all the way to Supreme Court. And what the school decided to do instead was go by socioeconomics. So now what they're doing is instead of race, they're going by what neighborhood you grow in, what income level your family is at. And the Supreme Court so far has said that's okay. So for these groups that are beginning to attack DEI, this may be the workaround going forward as other schools are looking at this ruling and may use socioeconomics to get around that. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. I believe we'll probably talk some more about DEI during the show, but I wanted to put that out there. And also, I wanted to put out, at the beginning of the year, we all know Cat Williams was on Club Shay Shay. And since then, Shannon Sharpe has gotten a lot of, I ain't gonna say a lot, but he's gotten some criticism for him and having Monique on there and just basically becoming the show that starts a lot of mess within the Black community. I just want to point out that he routinely has guests on there all the time that don't do that type of stuff. Yes, the Cat Williams, they go viral, but he has people on there like Terry Crews, who is like, he was so open and honest, and a guy that I didn't really care for too much until this episode, because I did feel like he should have stood up for Gabrielle Union, but what I didn't know is that he had already apologized to her and that he had already said, you know what? I wish I had to handle that different. I didn't hear anything about that, but you know, they talked about that and how he wished he handled it differently and how he saw her for the first time after all of that went down. And he was expecting Wade and Gabby to have like this certain energy towards them. And he said, Wade walked up to him and said, "What's up, Black man? You know, you're a Black king and I'm going to treat you as such." And he said, it just made him feel so just terrible for what, I guess you could say, he didn't do as far as defending her when she had that whole thing with, I think it's America's Got Talent was the show she was on. Mm-hmm. So I just want to point that out and just say that, hey, Shannon doesn't control what a lot of these guests say. Sometimes he may ask questions that lead them to, you know, certain mess. But overall, he's not a journalist. He's a former athlete that's just having conversations with people. He didn't prompt. I mean, especially with Cat Williams, I think he asked how he was doing. And Cat went off on that. So you can't put that on him. You know what I mean? But I just wanted to point out that he does have people on there like Johnny Manziel, and or AKA Johnny Football, Terry Crews, who they bring something different to the show, and he's not really all about just trying to go viral. So that's all I got. Oh, also a show called From. My bad. One last thing. A show called From that's on Epics. I think it's 2 seasons as of right now. Pretty good show. I don't want to say too much about what it's about. It's a lot of, it's more like a horror genre. Some of the characters are going to piss you off because they don't listen. But it's a decent show to check out. Me and the missus started watching it, so we're on season 2. So check that out. If you don't have Epics, like most people don't, it's not a popular network, I don't think. Just do a free trial.
Bro, check it out. Can you take a step back? What was the name of that school in Northern Virginia?
Thomas Jefferson Science and Technology, I believe it was. It should be in Fairfax County.
Do you know the details around how that came up? I'm almost positive I have a friend from FAMU that was kind of involved in that.
Really?
I think she, is that in Jefferson County?
No, it's in Fairfax County.
Okay. Thomas, what's the name of the school again?
Should be Thomas Jefferson School of Science and Technology.
Because I think she was one of the people leading the charge about it being, you know, being so highly, so many Asians, right? Like it was just, that was, and I want to say that was her. She was one of the main parents that was leading the charge against kind of expanding the horizon, because it seems like there was, I want to say it was like a discrimination suit initially against them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you were saying, so what were the results? Is it?
So it's, it's Thomas Jefferson High School for Science mm-hmm. and Technology. Prestigious magnet school in Fairfax County.
So they were being sued, I think, because of discrimination, because it was seems like it was just nothing but Asians, right?
Right. So originally, I guess the complaint was, hey, there's no
no diversity.
Right. It's so pretty I much think all she was Asians. One of the main,
I think she led that campaign. I vaguely remember her talking about this personally, and I've seen several videos on her discussing
we need
this.
To have her on. We need to have her. Even if she's not involved with this school.
Okay.
Try to have her on.
Yeah, so we can definitely look into that, because I want to say I remember her talking about that. I don't know if she went to that school as mm-hmm. a child. And if I remember, I want to say she went to the school, and then it was just hard to get her kids and everybody else. It was just like, it was, you know, there's no diversity, right? And it was very, very much, it was about who you know. So like the Asian community did a good job of keeping others out. And so basically you're saying they won the lawsuit and found a way to kind of keep their own, the school primarily Asian.
So no. I'm sorry if I confuse people. So they found a way to continue to implement a DEI type of admission.
So making them become more diverse.
Since like the parent group, they responded to the school getting rid of this, what is widely known as a very difficult entry exam. It was an entry exam and an entry fee, and the school got rid of both. And so then this parents group said, hey, that's anti-Asian or whatever. So the school said, okay, well then this is how we'll do it from now. We'll base it off socioeconomic, not we need a certain amount of African-Americans, we need a certain amount of Latino. We're just going to base it off neighborhoods and household income and things like that.
All right. Ryze, what you got for us?
Man, I got a lot. I got a whole lot. But first, I want to say point of order. RIP to the homie Eric Mays. If you guys don't know, Eric Mays is probably the most entertaining politician ever. He was a city council member. I can't remember where. But he took no shorts. And so he did not care what everybody thinks or what everybody was saying, he was the master of Robert's Rules of Order. And so he could pretty much say whatever he wanted to, because he knew exactly what he could say according to the Robert's Rules of Orders. And he knew how to call folks out. And so if you don't know or have never watched a Eric Mays video, Google him right now. Pause us. We're okay. Pause us. Go Google Eric Mays and then come back to finish off the show. He was hilarious. RIP to him, man. Anytime I go to a meeting, I just want to yell point of order.
So this would be the only time I ever agree with you saying pause. Continue.
So that Cash App is paying over 4% for their savings accounts. I still don't endorse Cash App as a savings vehicle. It is a money movement vehicle, and that's it. The banker in me still does not trust them. But if anybody's looking for any like some high interest rates for a little bit of money, Cash App's paying 4%. Wanted to throw that out there. Make sure everybody knew about that. The other thing I wanted to talk about real quick, man, is if you guys have kids that like Pokemon and they like RPG, like survival type games, like Roblox or Minecraft or anything, there's a new game called Pal World that just dropped maybe about 3 weeks ago, a month ago, that took the world by storm. It is killing most new games out there right now. And Ollie literally stole my Xbox and put it in his bedroom because he like fell in love with it. And so now he has an Xbox because of that game. So if you have kids that like those types of things, go out, check it out. It's like $25. It's a really cheap game, but it actually is pretty fun. It gets a lot of the Minecraft building, construction. They have to think through all of that. And so he's loving it. And he's been on it, building his whole little city and everything in the game. He wakes up, plays it, goes to sleep playing it. So go out there. Ring an endorsement from me. I like it. I enjoy it as well. I just don't get a chance to play it because he's Bogarting the Xbox. So, but that's all I got, man. Other than, I just want to say that Nikki told Megan Thee Stallion to get on her good foot, and Megan took that to heart, and she went and got an endorsement deal with Nike. And so now Megan Thee Stallion has an endorsement deal with Nike just off of being petty and trolling Nicki Minaj. So I like it. I'm with it. It's funny to me. So that's all I got, man.
How do you keep up with so much random?
So the Nike deal, she had a couple of months. That was like a couple of months ago? Like a shoe deal. Okay. All right. Yeah. I know she signed with Nike about a month or so ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She did. Okay. She did. No, it was just the timing of it all. She had already signed with them and everything. But Nike just, they took it a little bit and kind of launched it right around that time, announced it. So they took advantage of it.
No, that's dope.
Well, I don't have a lot. One of the shows I just wanted to jump in and endorse or encourage people to watch. I haven't started watching them because it's just been a crazy week. I traveled for work and it's been busy. We had our first Lamplighter sneaker ball we're recording Sunday, so yesterday. And so leading up to that, I just haven't had a lot of me time. But I apologize if I butchered Awaju, A Day Ahead on Disney Channel. It is a Nigerian based like superhero series with young kids and a pet gecko or something like that. But it looks really good. So it's a futuristic Nigerian, set in a futuristic Nigeria, and it looks like it's pretty good. So I can't wait to watch that with my kids. So that might be something during our downtime when we go on spring break next week. We'll have in our hopper to watch. Outside of that, I'm gonna say this: people save, protect your tax return. I feel like I tried this week. We were in a mall this past weekend. I think we were at a jewelry store. Z was just getting her ring cleaned, and I was just looking at some jewelry. And I saw a necklace that I like, and I just have expensive taste. I just don't like spending money. And so I tried on the necklace, loved it. And when I looked at the price tag, I was like, okay, not getting that. And I felt tried. The salesman was like, no worries, sir. Maybe you come back when you get your tax return. I'm like, is that how they see us? I looked at myself like, what do I have on? And I was, you know, I had them, you know, probably some J's and some, like, you know, so, you know, I don't know. I look maybe urban enough for him to think that it was cool for him to think that my tax returns go to jewelry or whatever. But I see it's predatory, right? I guarantee there's all types of sales and things going on to take the money that we have, protect it. That's all I got to say. Just protect it. Make the best use of it, because there's always more stuff to spend your money on. So whether you're $5,000, $10,000, you're going to spend that $10,000 and there's still going to be something else that you're going to need to spend money on. So make sure you take care of your basic needs and stuff like that. Budget, enjoy, you know, spend something on yourself. I say that, spend something on yourself, enjoy it. You worked hard for it. Maybe, probably. You know, some people don't get tax returns, might not have to work, but just take advantage of it, make it work for you. Don't just use it all. So I think that's pretty much all I got.
That's a sales technique that has gotten me a couple of times. That whole, oh, you can't afford it thing. And it's like, well, I'm going to buy this just because they don't think I can. And then I end up buying it. So I have been gotten by a couple of those sales techniques. I'm just going to say it. Just got it.
I didn't even think that deep. You know what? I didn't even think that deep. Probably maybe because I'm too arrogant. And I'm like, he's definitely not trying to say I don't make enough money. Because that's what he's not doing. You know, because Z was in there cleaning her ring. Her ring is a nice ring. So, you know, he was complimenting her ring. Like, this is very nice. You know, you got this here. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, I've never seen this one like this. This is very rare. All that good stuff. So I wasn't thinking that. I just thought it was, maybe it was. And I didn't think that deep. It was like, hey, I know you black people like to spend your money, your tax return. So when you get it, this is what you can waste your tax return on. Now, it was a nice little chain, though.
Lisa wasn't getting repo. Nice
white gold.
They're not gonna repo it.
I don't repo nothing. So, with that being said, I heard you talking to Sophie earlier today. So, is she available for a joke, or would you like to deliver one today?
She's not. I was she's at her cousin's house, and so I was on the FaceTime with her. But I got one from one of our listeners. So this comes from Terrell Brooks, Jerry. He's out there. And so he sent one to me. He said, what kind of car do people with no arms drive? A Nissan. Nissan. Don't act like that's not a knee slapper for the folks with arms.
Was that last part you? Was that ad lib?
No, it was part of the joke.
Is that part of the joke?
That's part of the joke too. He said that's a real knee slapper.
Oh man. So there's two bad jokes?
I thought it was pretty funny. I'm just saying.
Of course you do. You know, of course you do.
I don't even know how to follow that up.
You ain't gonna say nothing.
I don't know how to follow that up, yo.
Byron, what are you sipping on today, sir?
Macallan 12.
Okay, you got the big cubes in there, Jay.
Yeah, it's damn near.
I can hear the way they hit the glass. You know, regular cubes don't hit that.
By the way, I left my travel cup at the sneaker ball, and I'm hoping to get it back. So, Amberly, if you're listening, you know, don't forget to hit up hit up Levi and get my cup, please. I need that.
So that is one thing I do like. The do you have the sphere or actual like one of the big cubes?
I have the sphere. I want the big cubes though. I like the big cubes.
You like the big cubes? I like the spheres.
I got the sphere and I got the I guess the metal cubes. If you don't ever want your drink to get watered down,
I feel like they don't stay cold.
So that's the thing. So they gotta sit for a while. Like they're not like ice where. Like, even if you keep them in the freezer, they're not like ice. They have to sit for a while. Like, by the time you pour that second drink, they work perfectly.
Oh, so the first drinks are just a...
Yeah, it's pretty much room temperature. But still put it in there, because I was complaining to Tab about that, too. But I was like, oh, wait a minute. It's kicking in now. So, yeah,
After that first drink, I'm done with it, and I just, you know, I just go to my the ice maker and get... So, I have metal cubes somewhere. And I have both cube, the big cube and the sphere, but I feel like it's just too hard to make. Like it takes a lot to get them shaped. Like when you pour the little thing, I feel like it's never all the way full. It don't look like it do when I go to the bar. That's what it is.
The bar probably has something better though. You know,
yeah, like, I got 3/4 of a, cause I got a little plastic one container that I put it in.
Yeah.
And it shapes it, but
my spheres come out. They come out right, but I don't have the cube, so I don't know how the cube comes out.
Yeah,
do you have like the silicone molds, like the individual sphere silicone, or do you have like ice tray looking thing?
It's like a 4-pack tray.
Okay,
so you each have a hole you could pour in. Yeah.
Oh, so mine are individual. So I have 4, but mine are individual spheres. So like you pop them open and close them, and then it has the hole in the top. So like you can fill them up individually.
Do you use a funnel to fill them up?
Nah.
Yes, I do.
I don't know what my funnel is.
I just put them under there.
I try to keep up with that funnel.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know what my funnel is. So. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go ahead and jump into the show, fellas. So welcome back to all our guests, Three Brothers No Sense, your favorite barbershop style podcast. So when you hear the questions, we hear the questions. Who wants to go first?
I don't know who turn it is.
I can go first. Mine's a little bit more serious. And then hopefully you guys can lighten it up a little bit. Well, it's kind of going along these lines with DEI and everything like that. We haven't had a chance to really discuss SB 129. Which is kind of Alabama's copy and paste of Florida's DEI legislation that actually passed. Alabama's legislation just came out of the Senate. And so it is literally a copy and paste. I was talking to one of my friends, Brandon, who is into political science and everything. And he was saying that there's like this one or two groups that are just kind of reproducing and copy and pasting it and sending it to all their lawmakers that they can to get it out. But I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on it. I wanted to try to break it down to the listeners. We talked about this with Wooisms, right? Like we try to make these things bite-sized, manageable, fun, quick, easy to understand. But it's one that's kind of really going to affect a lot of people in their education, in their schools, in the kids' schools, those types of things. So wanted to get you guys' thoughts on it and what can we do to try to combat this from actually becoming law here in Alabama, but nationwide, if possible.
Can you tell me exactly what it is?
Oh, yeah. So SB 129 is it's a bill in the Alabama legislation that actually what it does is it kills diversity, equity, inclusion funding for any public education or publicly funded at higher education schools, right? So if you have a diversity and equity and inclusion department at the school, you can't use state funds for that. So you got to either go out and fundraise to be able to have it, or you can't have it at all. In Florida, I think it was University of Florida actually fired their entire DEI department just this week because of the legislation that passed in Florida. And so that's what SB 129 would do here in Alabama. It would cut any funding. there are a lot of services that are minority or diversity led. Like at UAB, we have what we call TRIO services. We have a minority retention department. Like all of those departments wouldn't be able to be funded. It also doesn't allow you to talk about certain historical moments that may cause certain students, we're not going to say who, but you know, we'll just say they probably start with a Y and end with a T. And they, those students, if it makes them feel uncomfortable or feel guilty about the history, then you can't teach it. Like all of this is literally written in the bill like that. And so that's what the bill does. And it actually passed and got through the Alabama Senate right now. And so it's going over to the House and going to get discussed and everything. And so the legislature is actually thinking about passing this, and I'm uncomfortable because I think it might actually pass. So not necessarily specifically about SB 129, but just about this anti-DEI movement. What are you guys kind of thoughts on it and what we need to do to try to fix that, man?
I'm going to let Buff go. He's more into politics, but I just want to follow up your last statement where you know, usually when you hear this too shall pass, you think it's a good thing, but this too shall pass. And it's not a good thing. It's going to pass. It's going to pass.
All right. So I was a bit distracted from some of that explanation, but I'll comment on what I did here. Got some people showing up that I canceled on. I don't know why they're at my door right now. Anyway, making them feel bad. That, I mean, there's really not a lot to say, man. Especially with the part I did here while I wasn't distracted. You mentioned how it's similar to Florida, and I know at one point, you know, Florida was doing the whole banning books thing, kind of along the same lines as what you brought up, Rozzy. And like, it only took one, not even a parent. It only took one person in Florida to raise a reason why a book shouldn't be in a school. You didn't even have to be a parent. So there were some adults in Florida that were going to these school board hearings or however they do it and saying, hey, I don't think this book should be, they don't even have a kid in school. That's how easy they were making it. And that's what that sounds like with this in Alabama. The kid doesn't even genuinely have to feel bad. Like their parents can literally say, hey, you feel bad, don't you? Don't this make you feel bad? Okay, we're going to go do something about it. And so it's just another way to, you know, eradicate a true history. And like we talked about at the top of the show, DEI has been, is getting pushed back, and they're doing it in a clever way. I don't know about necessarily in this bill, but they're using a lot of the words that, you know, minorities have used for a long time. They're using like, this is anti-equality. You know what I'm saying? This is anti this, anti that. The same thing we were saying, they're like using it against us and saying, hey, it's supposed to be fair for all. Nobody's supposed to feel bad in our schools. All of our kids are supposed to feel good. So you're making my kid feel bad. That's not right. We need to get rid of it. Never mind if it's true and if it's coming from a historical standpoint.
Yeah. And history is uncomfortable. You can't erase it because it's uncomfortable. Like that's the whole point of a study in a lot of these historical atrocities, right? We'll teach the Alamo and how we remember the Alamo all day long, but we don't want to remember the Tulsa Massacre, right? Like a lot of people died in both. So what's the difference there? Why do we want to remember one and not the other, right?
I forget the technique that it's called that authors use. But it's a term they use. They say if you're writing about something that's gonna like induce guilt in the reader, what you wanna do is make it as far away from them as possible. So you wanna talk about it as something that happened 50 years ago or something in like a foreign country somewhere. And that way the reader can say, hey, that's wrong, and not say, hey, that's people like me. and make them feel guilty.
That's just not writing. I mean, we kind of highlighted Ruby Bridges the other day in one of our groups, right? Mm. And they, when you look at most of the footage from her going to school, what does it look like? Is it Technicolor?
Yeah, it's black and white.
It's black and white.
Yeah, they did it so it looked like it's really far. They had color
television back then.
Mm-hmm.
They had color television. If you look at a lot of the civil rights, like, things, it's black and white. Like, it's meant to look like it was years ago. And it wasn't that long. She's still alive. Like, it's mm-hmm. And that's the problem. So
they only tell a piece of the story. Like, Ruby Bridges, she was talking about how she the kids walked out. The parents went and took their kids out. So even though they say they integrated the school, she was in a class all by herself. So did they really integrate the school at that point?
No, of course not. So there's a couple of things here. The bill is stupid. It is what it is. All of it's stupid. But we're in a country that people do not, we're not an intelligent people. We get our news, we get our information from TikTok, Facebook, fake news stations that can pander whatever message they want. We have people running for president that make up their own facts. They make up their own, you know, recently Trump got called out for faking a union rally where I forgot what state it was. I might have been South Carolina, a union rally where the auto workers union rally. And when they found out about the plant, there's no unions at that plant. There was planted signs. They paid the factory $20,000 when they do, because that's, you know, the receipts came out. Mm-hmm. $20,000 to rent out the place to make it a union rally. And when reporters went out there, they were interviewing, because Trump's gonna be, you know, at a rally, and they started doing their research and they started interviewing the participants. They're like, yeah, we're not in a union. We're not in a union, but I have a Trump unions for Trump. You know, auto worker unions for Trump. So I say all to say everything is fake and made up, and people aren't very intelligent, and they'll justify about anything. But what I want us to pay attention to is I think we got hoodwinked by what we think cancel culture is. Cancel culture is not Rizzy saying something on the podcast and being canceled. Cancel culture is SB 129. Cancel culture is banning of books. Cancel culture is saying that slaves were no longer, weren't slaves, they were interns. Cancel culture is historical. I can care less if a comedian gets canceled. We're canceling history. Like, if you just sit back, and this is what's really going on in our country. Like, mm-hmm. We're canceling facts. We're canceling things that level the playing ground for people who have been disenfranchised for centuries. We're canceling real America. We're canceling the American dream for others that do not look like the people on the dollar bill. Like, there's nothing that really supports the American dream anymore. Like, anything that goes against white American Judeo-Christian beliefs is being canceled. And that's what's scary, because I don't know where this stops.
Yeah.
I mean, 10 years ago, would you have thought that any of this was possible?
No. And it all stems from the Supreme Court and the clearance.
I'm going to say yes, actually.
Oh,
you,
wow.
You would have?
Yeah, yeah. I would have known how it looked, but there's always going to be pushback. Like, 45 is literally the pushback to the election of Obama.
Yeah, but 14, 10 years ago, Obama was still in office. We heard 45, but Are we that dumb that we're going to let this dude president? 10 years ago, did you think Trump could truly be president?
10 years ago, was that 2014? It seemed far-fetched.
Yeah,
it seemed exactly. Far-fetched.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah. As it started unraveling, you started like... Trump became the Twilight Zone to me. Once he got elected and people started taking him seriously and he got his Trumpers involved, like, anything became possible. Like, there's a whole King Trump party. There's people who want him. They got King Trump shirts and everything.
That's why he can say he wants to be a dictator and nobody bats an eye.
You know, they feel like he should be. He should be. I just, when it comes to DEI being eliminated, it's scary because I think slowly but surely the gateway to, I don't even know what it is. Oppression is near. I mean,
the 1950s.
It seems like every oppressed minority group is under more attack. Even with, you know, the reversal of Roe v. Wade, it's women are under attack, right? Like it's that that's just a God given right that they should have. You know, it's women under attack. All minority groups are in tech. They just try to make it black or white because we're the scariest of the groups. But everything that affects us affects everybody else. You know, they might have a little more support because of their groups, but I don't know, man.
It's the slow
I'm in Texas,
unwinding
so nothing surprises
of the civil
me
rights movement.
Point.
That's ultimately what it is, man. I think
humanity as a whole.
Yeah, yeah. I just think that it's when we talk about like these DEI, that like you say, it's all groups. I just don't get how the minorities, women, folks with disabled children or disabled family could sit by and say we don't want DEI, and that lets you know how uninformed they really are when it comes to these types of things. They think DEI and it's all about white person versus black people, and that's it, right? Black people trying to take this over, or you know, you got to make me feel bad about slavery. And it's like they're doing these one or two things that, and they're saying we are okay with this whole bill because those one or two things, and they don't understand how far reaching DEI really is, making people feel comfortable for their disabilities and those types of things. And, you know, accessibility, like all of that comes out of those offices.
Anybody who's not a middle-aged, fully abled white male, I don't understand how they support any of these things.
Right. Right.
Because I mean, it's
if you need any assistance,
if you're anything outside of those groups,
So second part of my question. So we, because I want to give you guys a chance to get to your question. Second part, what do we do? What, like, how do we combat this? Right. Like this big push, this DEI, this. Anti-book, this anti-women Roe v. Wade, like this push or this political push that's happening right now, how do we fix that?
Well, the answer that'll make people roll their eyes is participating in elections. But some of that is true. And I say that because, we talked about Florida. Look who's the governor. Look at the first time when DeSantis ran, how close that race was. You talked about Roe v. Wade. Look at how close the Clinton 45 election was and how it came down to pretty much, I think, a total of less than 70,000 votes between three states, and how that man was able to put three justices on the Supreme Court in one term. Okay, think about the flip version of that. had we had a Democrat in office, you don't have Roe v. Wade being repealed like that. And with Florida, if you know, more people come out and vote against DeSantis, you don't have some of the stuff we're seeing there. It comes down to elections, and not just the general, the primaries as well. I was talking to somebody, hopefully we'll have him on the show soon, but he was saying, you know, he's raised all this money and he's in a primary, but he was saying that we have 800,000 people in the district. In the last election, only 72,000 of them voted. That's not even 10%. You know what I mean? But we expect our representation to look out for us. Well, how are they going to represent you when you're not even making your voice be heard? So that's part of it right there. That's the tip of it right there. That's one of the ways to fight back.
Yeah. It's wow. Less than 10%. Less than 10% yeah. showing up. That's crazy, man.
So I had to think about that, because it seems like when you initially asked that question, my answer was nothing. I feel like there's nothing we can do, because we as a people, like I said, we're not the most intelligent. So I'm trying to be a little more optimistic and strategic about it. And so, like, there's a couple of things we got to do. First of all, we have to be more compassionate about what's really going on and how it affects others. Mm. If you look at the things that attack, they're attacking things that they can pick and choose, because it only affects a small, not even a small group, a certain group, where overturning Roe v. Wade is a woman's issue. So black men aren't jumping, or men aren't jumping out there for women. SB 129 is a black issue. White women who are being oppressed by Roe v. Wade and things like that aren't necessarily jumping behind that. The gay community is not jumping behind certain things like that. So it's like, we have to be compassionate to understand that we're under attack, right? You said we got to get in on vote, Byron. You kind of led me to this. Got to be more informed. Because we can get out and vote, but we're getting out to vote for the president. If you ask the average voter during a general election, they're going out to vote for the president. That is their whole thing. Mm-hmm. They're voting for Trump and all Republicans. They're voting for Biden and all Democrats. Are you voting for the people who have your best interests? Are you challenging your politicians and knowing exactly where they stand and how this affects them, how, you know, midterms and every election affects them? We're currently doing a series on political awareness with the Lamplighters, and we're starting with the city, state, and then federal government, because for most people don't realize how important the city government is for them, local government, especially, mm-hmm. not just city, but and how much power a mayor has. I was talking to Fred the other day, and it's like, when you look at it, your local government probably has more impact on your daily life than anything else. And it made me think about how much power the mayor has, because I was thinking back to The Wire, and the mayor of Baltimore was almost like, you know, he's the person that makes things move and shake in that city. Mm-hmm. The mayor of Houston is the person who makes things move and shake in your city. That's the person who's going to make life easy. They're going to make sure that the police department has a certain push to do certain things. So that's neither here or there. But it's like, you got to become more informed, and then we got to be intentional. We have to come up with a game plan. You have to focus on the things that. And call out the politicians. You have to go out and campaign and get, you know, it's not easy. It's uncomfortable. It's time consuming to be an advocate for something. Like, you got to go out there and do it. The average person will never do it. I'm just guessing. The average person will never do anything out in the political party outside of vote. Most people that you know will never do anything connected to politics outside of cast their votes. And you're not even 100% they're going to vote in all elections. We got to be intentional about making the change. Intentional about the change, saying, hey, we got to have a change and my part is this.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Love it.
Those are my 3 points.
So
I don't know if they work. I don't even know if they make sense. Just wrote them down really fast.
Nah, they do, man. They do. So, but I'm going to let, I know we're getting long, so I'm going to let one of y'all go and get, at least get one more question in.
I'll go. My question actually, believe it or not, kind of piggybacks off of your question, but in a lighter note. So there was a I posted something where we were talking about the best episodes of Martin and stuff like that a few days ago, and it made me think about because I was reading some of the comments and like Martin's a must watch in your generation, you know, and it made me think about how certain shows wouldn't work today, right? And then it made me think more so like, but why do they work then? So I looked at shows based off of generations, like so Gen X, millennials, baby boomers. And I'm like, what were the top shows for those generations? What were the most, you know, if you watched, and what do those shows tell us about those generations? For example, like, I think our generation might have been the last generation that had to sit down and watch TV with our parents, right? And then our grandparents, because there was only one or two TVs in the house. So I grew up and I watched Archie Bunker, right? Mm-hmm. But Archie Bunker was like everybody's favorite bigot. Archie Bunker is would be a diehard Trump supporter, and we would hate him today. But we loved him then. Right? So what are the, you know, top, call it three shows that you think define, I'll say 2 to 3 shows that define a generation. So I'll say millennials, Gen X, in the baby boomers, that kind of like, if you think about it, like it defines that generation, and you know, and we can kind of compile a list together, but I think that's kind of why, you know, when they talk about going back, make America great again, maybe they want to go back to Archie Bunker days where they can make little racist jokes and sexist jokes and nobody, you know, they say we're too sensitive today. But these were the shows that, you know, Married with Children was a great show. Al Bundy would be canceled today. You know, Al Bundy was I feel like every Gen X dad related to Al Bundy and the struggle of, you know, being a breadwinner and all this stuff and a lot of stay at home moms and, you know, whatever. But those shows were the stories of the generation, you know. So I don't know if y'all want to compile a list together. Top three. Beach generation.
You can talk through them. You want to go by generation, make it a little easier or.
Okay, let's start with baby boomers. I think Archie Bunker is a perfect one.
Yeah, it's probably the go-to right there. Yeah.
The Wonder Years.
I look at the.
So you're saying the MAGA people want to be Archie Bunker without the son-in-law, because the son-in-law was like the foil to him.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's the life they're dealing with. They relate. He makes the show because they can relate to him. And the changing of times, and it's kind of like it's the you just don't get it,
because he was like the celebrated villain. I don't think MAGA sees themselves as any type. They see 45 as a hero, so I think they want an unchecked Archie Bunker type society.
Yeah, because truthfully, Archie Bunker, like you say, he was the celebrated villain. It was like. They made him over the top bad, right? Yeah. And that super wrong.
He wound up being wrong. Every episode he was wrong.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, what was it? Mama's Family, or
But are you talking about Archie Bunker?
No, I'm just saying Archie Bunker another show.
That's all in the Mama's Family. I would say is more Gen X. Yeah. I think that was like
Mama's Family's Gen X,
early 80s. Yeah, Mama's. I'll say baby boomer TV shows. Here are a few: Batman, Bewitched, Bonanza, Gunsmoke, Lost in Space, All in the Family, Captain Kangaroo, I Love Lucy, Perry Mason, Peyton Place, Adam's Family, the Andy Griffith Show, The Beverly Hillbillies, Mary Tyler Moore.
Definitely Andy Griffith.
Andy Griffith got to be on there, right? Yeah.
And Bonanza.
Yeah, I think those are it. It just shows Andy Griffith shows that
I think Andy Griffith is a perfect example of them being able to have this generic white space, and there were black people that would move in and out of it, but not necessarily be the primaries.
Were there?
Yeah, they had a couple of black folks come in. On Andy Griffith, yeah. I'd have to look up the episodes. Like I say, like
that is news to me.
Sporadically, they'd have a couple in there, and they move in and out of the space. But ultimately, there was this like homogenous, Ferg, I'll say it, homogenous like whiteness there, but they didn't feel bad about it. They didn't have to because they weren't interacting with minorities, right? It was like everything was in this town and it was happening in that town. And I think that's what they want to go back to. They want to go back to those times of being able to say they feel like it was all good and everything was good in those times because you weren't interacting with it. You didn't have to worry about diversity, right? There was no worrying about it because it was almost like that separate but equal was on the screen. And they never talked about the inequality of it all. And that's why I Love Lucy, because I Love Lucy did address that. And it talked about that and you know, like, the husband, he had to deal with that being a minority.
So it would be called woke today.
I love Lucy would be called woke today. Yeah, it would.
I'll give you that. So I'm gonna go back to Andy Griffith. I think the thing about it is, I mean, what was the song that was released last year where it was talking about small town America?
I forgot the name of it. Yeah.
I think that's the thing.
Try that in our town.
Mayberry is the poster child for try that in this town. It's the things were so simple when we kept to ourselves. Things were so simple. You know, there wasn't all this crime in Mayberry. If Andy Griffith is your main police force, he is the protector of this town. Those were the good old days. When you had most of your blacks in the South either living like to themselves, or they were in the urban city and they kept to themselves, and you kept them in, you know, the little area,
mm-hmm.
you know, the little area redlined. That's the America we know and love. And everybody seemed happy because black people in the urban city were watching Andy Griffith. They were watching All in the Family. You know, I think that's what it is. It's just things were so simple. There was a little more race issues. Yeah, there was a little more racism, if you want to call it that. But everybody was happy. Everybody understood their place. I don't have to be racist when black people don't come to Mayberry.
Everybody understands.
Ain't no racist people. Ain't nobody in Mayberry racist. You know why? Because there ain't no niggas in Mayberry. You said, I love Lucy, Rizzy. I might.
That's funny, but that's the point I bring up when people say, hey, the North is less racist than the South. No, it's more black people in the South, so you hear about more incidents of racism. But the North is just as racist.
Yeah, the West is too. The mm-hmm. West, like, there's not a lot of black people in Seattle and upstate. Like, it's go to upstate New York, go watch some random show from the early 90s when they're in Point Place, Pennsylvania, or like, you know, it's all these little random cities on the Eastern Shore. There's not a lot of black people there.
Yeah, and the ones that are act a lot like them and could be considered the good ones.
They stay in their place.
Yeah. Yeah.
They stay in their place. They probably have hoods in all these places. It's just those 27 black families stay in that area with the 27 black families.
Yeah. I've talked about, Friday Night Lights a couple times on here. That's a perfect example of that. The first three seasons where you think like, oh, there's like a few black people, but it's a white town. And then you look and it's like, oh no, they have like the east area of town, and it's all the black people over there. And so the last three seasons is all about that side of town. So it's a really good show that shows exactly that. Like, you don't have to be racist when we have this big divide and split.
I'm a veto I Love Lucy and put Gunsmoke, Bonanza, all those westerns in the same, because I think it goes back to this male dominated male, like it represents masculinity.
Yeah.
Men were men. They saved the day. They were cowboys. You know, what's more masculine than a cowboy? Guys going out, shooting it out, you know, if they disagree, and protecting the town with your pistols and your guns and barroom fights and all this stuff, and stopping the bad guys were all the Indians, you know, like you're protecting a family against the invaders, whatever. These are those things. You know, I feel like that whole Western world, you know, that Western time period when, you know, cowboys and Indians was the big thing. I think those are the perfect shows that represented that generation. It was all about, at the end of the day, white male dominance.
Mm-hmm. And then going into the Gen X, same thing. I was going to have Walker Texas Ranger there for the Gen X. I think it's 100% kind of that same mentality going into it.
I think it was one of those rare ones that, I think Gen X and Millennials kind of blur, but I think Walker Texas Ranger, will you put it up there, Byron?
Yeah, it definitely captures that feel that they were going for. Yeah, I don't know how popular it was though. I know it was.
Yeah, Walker thing, Texas so Ranger, I wouldn't say that's Walker why I Texas Ranger ran for like 19 seasons or something crazy. Like it was.
It might still be on, actually.
Still not how popular it was though.
I will say it is popular because when we went to Egypt and they found out I was from Texas, oh, like Walker Texas Ranger.
Yeah,
you know, I'm like, I guess. Yeah, I did. I guess. You know, I would do things like for Gen X. I think when you look at a lot of those late night soap operas, Dallas and all that stuff, I think that was their generation. That was a generation that was the people who were around in the 80s, that they were adults in the 80s, late 70s, mm-hmm. early 80s, the yuppies and all this stuff, the people who were starting to make the American greed started paying off. You know, so Dallas, you know, everybody want to be JR, and hell, the soap operas.
The soaps.
Victor Newman and all that stuff, Young and the Restless, like that was, I think that was the story of their, it was success. Success, cutthroat, and winning. But I felt like that's who we're up against, you know. Walker, Texas Ranger, what you got for us, Byron? Put one on there. Gen X. Let me see. Most popular shows in Gen X.
Is it Roseanne? I love Roseanne, actually. I liked Roseanne.
Do you really?
But you know what? That's Roseanne. A good example. So that's what I meant. But Roseanne,
she literally got canceled when they brought it back.
Not even that. I think if you look at those people, we accepted them. Roseanne's family would be Trump supporters. Those are the type.
Oh no, that's the thing. Because the Trump type guy came. They have an episode where the Trump character, or like the hardcore Republican character, comes and tries to get her to vote for him, and she goes after him. No, an old Roseanne.
New Roseanne. I don't know, bro, because Roseanne's family seems like these people who stormed the Capitol. Right, that middle of America.
I don't know if there are any shows that portray the cult following that 45 has. Yeah,
but I'm saying, but now those are the type of people that I feel like when you look at the Trump supporters, the people we say vote against, they were lower class. The probably union workers, and like these are the people who probably should vote for their own. They're voting against their own welfare. These are Roseanne's family is the type of people Trump targeted.
Yeah, now that's
look
true.
At interviews, that's and true. It'll be you will see Rose. That's what I'm saying. Maybe not her family. You know, like there's, you know, you can't just, you know, just say all people from that area or that are going to be Trump supporters, right? But that's the type of people he targeted. So I think Roseanne portrays that working class white America to, you know, that two income household struggling that we became used to, that a lot of Americans start dealing with, and just trying to latch onto anything to get out. I think those are a lot of the Trump supporters. They saw their parents and stuff work, and mom and dad, you know, one income households in the good old days. They grew up watching the gun smokes and stuff like that as kids, right? Yeah. They grew up watching.
And it's easy to play the blame game with that, right? You grew up watching like those two income white families struggle, and then you see diversity issues come up, and now there's this diversity push, and so that one job that I could have got, that black guy got because of diversity pushes, and it's like, yeah, but I mean, yeah. Black people weren't getting any of the jobs. Like, we still only get like 12% of the jobs. So it's like,
so Gen X might be the first generation that had to compete with the civil rights minority. Like, they're the group that really had to compete against going the schools that they could have got into the year before, or, you know, before DEI and affirmative action really took hold. These were the people who had to compete with it. So I'll say, because we're running out of time, I think Married with Children's another one that tells the story of a generation. I think Roseanne. I think Cosby Show.
Yeah, I think Cosby shows the black side of it from a black bourgeoisie, right? Like that, I liked it because it showed that. And then you can kind of go to the other side of that, right? And you can talk about New York Undercover or some of the other ones that show the black side of like urban areas and everything. But I like that we started to see shows that show the spectrum of life instead of just the white side of life. I think that's what we got with that Gen Z group. We were able to start seeing those shows that show the other side that you didn't get from the baby boomers. It was just the white person point of view.
To my Gen X.
Yeah, your Gen X generation, right? Like the shows that were popular during that time frame. You were able to see the other side of the coin.
You said Gen Z, so I was just making sure.
Oh, my bad.
And so I would say millennials are a little different. There's a lot of diversity. I think you look at our shows became more about culture. I feel like you look at millennials were the first group to embrace reality TV.
Yeah.
I think that played a huge part on our culture. I think you look at, I couldn't even call it a show. I think it's the MTV BET video group.
When you say millennials, you're talking about us, right?
Well, because yes.
We're the generation that embraced reality TV.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So millennials are, it depends on who you ask. I say, because it's not exact 80, science, and that's why I get that. Yeah. Yeah, there's people like, well, you're 80. You know, I'm born in 80. A lot of studies say millennials start 81. Also, you're a Gen Xer. Dude, it's not exact science. It's not like you cut, like my life changed that drastically because I was born 3 months before Byron, right? Yeah. Like, you know, like, well, bro, you completely, most people say we're in a different generation because I was born in 80, you were born in 81. You know, it's just like, no, you know,
Yeah, I like the idea of like year groups. So like you're basically your elementary. When did you go to kindergarten, right? I think that's the easiest way to talk through generations. So yeah,
I think when you're on a cusp of anything, when you're on that, I think anybody was probably 78, 79 to like 82. That's why they call us Zennials. Like we, because depending on how old your parents were, where you're at, it's the Zennials. They describe them as you have analog childhood and a digital adulthood. So you grew up playing outside and doing things like that, but you, as an adult, you were introduced to social media and emails and all this stuff. Our parents didn't have that as young adults, mm-hmm. you know? So we were the last outside, going outside and, you know, playing and going to the, you know, skipping rocks and doing all that stuff that our kids can't relate to. So we're kind of on the cusp. And so when, you know, Gen X, oh, you millennials suck. That are like, yeah, there's some characteristics of later millennials, you know, but so I think like Real World and all that stuff, the music videos where I think the music videos and things like that, or the take reality TV, but I say BT, MTV, VH1. If you can categorize them as a genre, I think that kind of shows would be one category for the, I think, millennials, because I think we got more cultural exposure through those things than most generations before us. Because
if MTV was playing videos all through the 80s too, so that would be considered your Gen X stuff. They were playing like more of the Gen X stuff. I mean,
so I'm saying when MTV, BET, where you can be in the South and you're seeing New York hip hop, or you're in New York and you're seeing Outkast in Atlanta, you know, you're seeing the South, you're seeing West Coast, like we're seeing different lot, like people who look like us all over the world. You know, when we were watching shows, you know, you go watch an MTV video from the 80s. It didn't show, go watch a Bon Jovi video. What did that tell you about wherever he was from?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't learn anything about, you know, do you even know where Bon Jovi was from, right? It was all about the music and not Jersey. About, I think so. But it was, I don't think it was about the culture. It was about, this is, you know, all rock bands, in my mind, have you ever thought about where any rock band was from?
No.
MTV in the 90s and stuff introduced you to like that Seattle West Coast grunge. You saw the West Coast rap. You saw East Coast rap. You saw South Coast rap. You saw different genres and different people who all looked the same that 10 years ago didn't really have. You saw the sound and culture. You saw how people dress. You know, Jerry curls in the 90s. Who got Jerry curls in the 90s? But that's a West Coast thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, they didn't. People on the West Coast or the East Coast seeing how the West Coast cars and the South cars look, you know, the big, you know, box top Chevys and all that stuff. Like, you don't see that in New York.
I think there was more context and nuance there, but I don't know if videos would be, I think music in general and videos throughout tells you the generation that they're in, right? Like what they see, what they actually look for. I do think that's there. I don't think it's a difference between the generations with there's a difference of what they play, but I don't think that music video as a genre, as you put it, changes. But throughout the year, I think it's always doing that. So if you want to define the era, you'd have to go into individual videos to be able to do that. But I think the video or the music always defined the generation. But if we're talking about just shows, TV shows, I agree with you on like the reality, the Real World and those types of things where we're trying to get more into kind of real unscripted stuff. But I would kind of go to some of the shows that I'm trying to, your talk shows probably were big for the millennials, right? So your Arsenio Halls and all of that stuff where they weren't as big there.
That was definitely Gen X.
Really? That was doing the talk shows?
Yeah, that we were. Arsenio was on his way down when we were kids. Arsenio was made for 20, 30-year-olds.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's a Gen X show. Yeah, Arsenio probably went out in, what, 90, 94, 95? He had MC Hammer and people like that on, right? So Arsenio was, we had to stay up late to watch Arsenio, right?
Yeah, we were still at school. So it was before the 90s. We had bedtimes. Yeah.
You know, Arsenio didn't make a show for a 13, 14-year-old.
I actually think he did, though.
He made it for 20, 30s, like, but we can relate to it. Like, we stayed up.
He was hip hop, and who does hip hop cater to? Hip hop caters to the youth. My mama, a lot of parents were not watching Arsenio Hall. We drove that show. The youth drove that show.
Maybe your 19, 20 year olds, like your early adults, but yeah, I think it really was like geared towards us.
We couldn't be in his audience when we were young. You got to remember, millennials. We're the oldest millennials. Mm-hmm. We're the grandfathers of millennials.
No, we couldn't be in his audience, but we also couldn't go reasonably to an NWA show. But they catered to us.
They made music. Byron had to ask his mom to buy the CD. I'm not saying our parents.
Yes.
What I'm saying is Gen X.
It catered to us.
What I'm saying is to the, just like we're the older millennials. I'm talking about, I feel like he catered to the younger Gen Xers. So he catered to the early mid to late 20s. Like those were his crowd.
Folks born in like 75 to 80 type thing where they're
you know, like, you know, 70 to 80. You know, like but the majority were the later the last generation.
Yeah, some I can see that. You know, like, I was just thinking, when we were 25, we probably liked the exact same thing the 16-year-old kids like.
Yeah.
Like,
he had, like, Elijah Muhammad on there. Elijah Muhammad, there was 13, 14-year-olds would give a damn about Elijah. We watched Arsenio Hall when we knew MC Hammer was performing. Like, there was, like, certain episodes we're going to watch that was like, oh, shit, he got MC Hammer. But when he had a random guest that was talking politics or something like that, he had Bill Clinton on. Bill Clinton was on there for Rozzy. Rozzy can't vote. He was trying to get the young voter, young black urban voters, young black voters who...
But Bill Clinton tried to portray that hip coolness. Like, there was no advantage of him admitting he smoked weed. That's not going to appeal to some bourgeois 30-year-old, but that made him look cool to people our age.
But we don't vote.
We don't.
So there's no point to it.
But the youth is what drives. The youth drives so much. So no, we can't vote. But the appeal that he brought, what he tried to personify, was youth
to young voters, right? To young voters, right?
Yeah.
So you know who were young voters? When he was running for president in 92. You know who were young voters in 92? The young Gen Xers.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the young Gen Xers are who he was. So what I saw Arsenio Hall was the young Gen Xers. It was the 18 to 25. That meant that 18 to 25 in 92 meant that they were born in 74.
That's crazy.
You know, like, you think about it, right? Like, what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, like, we don't want to make it seem like we're, like, that was, call it, somebody born 68 to 74 was a young Gen Xer.
But like Arsenio Hall, people older than us don't romanticize about his show like we do.
Because it was taboo for us.
I think there was a certain cater to the youth on that show.
Yeah.
Like having Shaq on their rap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Johnny Carson wasn't having that.
Yeah. Because Johnny Carson was made for the older Gen Xers and baby boomers. But we got to remember, that was a whole there was a whole... I think with the older group, there's a younger group.
I think you're looking at what legally a certain age could do. Companies gear towards age groups all the time that don't have the money or means to do stuff, but they're going to influence it. You know what I mean?
Put it this way. They were marketing from people who were 12 to 25, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. everybody older than 14, 12 to 25, everybody 14 and older is a Gen Xer. Yes, they market to us too, the Zennials. We were on the cusp. And this is the perfect example of what I call the Zennials, because we were on a cusp. We were still getting some of that stuff that the Gen Xers were getting that we could relate to. Like, we watched Arsenio Hall with the young Gen Xers. We watched NWA with the young Gen Xers. Like, we can relate to that, but we're the same people that listen to, you know, insert random young rapper today. We still can relate to that. We can respect the old school, and we can not you know, mumble rap young rappers, but you know what? This conversation gets too long. But no, that's what Zennials is cool about, is like, I feel like we're a group that relates to so much. We were there for Arsenio Hall, right? We were there for Arsenio Hall, but we were also young when we were there to see Clinton go on Arsenio Hall. We were young, still young, when Barack got into office. It's like we weren't even 30. No. 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So like, we were still in our mid to late 20s, you know? But we were there for Arsenio Hall when Clinton was in our mind, Clinton was the closest thing we're ever gonna get to a black president. We were kids. Then we were young adults when we got our first black president. Like, we got to see a lot, you know? We weren't really paying attention to the Reagan years, you know? You're a political guru, so you...
I wasn't paying attention to Reagan.
Clinton was our first president that we probably remember, right? Mm. Clinton was a president that we knew. Clinton was our first president.
Yeah.
So we remember those years. We were young enough, but old enough to remember those years. We were kids. We couldn't vote for him, but we were kids. We got to vote for Barack. So I hope y'all voted for Barack. But let's go. Call it a day. Brazzy, you can chop and screw it however you want to.
Yeah, I'll try to get it down.
I started off the show talking about how DEI is under attack. I'm going to end it that way. Fearless Fund is a venture capital group that invests in businesses that are owned by minority women, black women. They provide seed money and startup funds. They are now under attack by the American Alliance for Equal Rights. Remember, I told you they use the words against us that we've always used: equal rights, all that stuff. American Alliance for Equal Rights is saying that, hey, that is showing favoritism, and it does not speak to equality. Only singling out, helping out black women is not the way to go. So now they are under attack. All areas of DEI are now under attack, from the school to the business world. So it's just something to really keep an eye on. I talked about Shannon Sharp earlier also. And, you know, he's had criticisms. He's also had certain beefs. He had a beef with Mike Epps that they cleared up, where Mike Epps lied and said that, you know, Shannon asked him to be on the show, when in truth, it was Mike that asked to be on his show. But what really got under Shannon's skin was Mike Epps alluding to his sexuality and calling him gay. And then we fast forward to, you know, I guess the leak, what do you call it? The criminal complaint against Diddy. And out of the 75 pages of that, what everybody got from that is, oh man, Diddy gay. That's what people got from that. And it's just, to me, it just still speaks to how, like, for all the progress we've made in being accepting of the homosexual lifestyle, we still have so far to go, because that's what everybody is keying on. Never mind that, hey, Diddy might be a controlling, drugging, raping individual.
Pedophile,
that cheats people. Pedophile, exactly. That cheats people out of money. Never mind those allegations. It was like, oh, Diddy, he gay. You know what I mean? So, and same thing with Shannon Sharp. Out of all the criticism, the one that got to him the most was Mike Epps saying, you know, Shay Shay. That already tell you what you need to know about him. What grown man wants you to call him Shay Shay? That's why he wearing them tight clothes. That's what got to him. So gayness is still we still got a long way. Go ahead first.
That's why I mentioned a couple of shows ago. It's just like when we're talking about pause, like we're so like we have to let the world know that we're not gay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, what is their assumption? Like, people ain't worried about, like, you know, is he mistreating his wife or his kids? They don't care about all that. Mm-hmm. It's as long as you know I'm not gay. We fight tooth and nail. The one of the worst things a woman could call a man is that nigga gay. Mm-hmm. You know, they challenge his sexuality. You know, they can say, well, he beat me. He did this. This is it. And that nigga niggas. It's like, whoa. He's like, you know, it don't matter. Like everything else, like he can. And I was like, you got to get past it. I saw that too, and I'm like, we got to do better. So
I'm
glad you called it out. If people were madder at Puffy for this stuff than they were R. Kelly, just because of like it's if there was no. You say there's one thing they took was that Diddy was gay. I'm pushed back a little more. The other thing they took was trying to figure out who else was gay.
Right.
That was the second part.
Because Meek Mill
has been defending himself, and I feel like he's making it worse with the defense he's offering. So that's interesting. The last thing I want to bring up is Alabama, your primary election is this Tuesday. I believe Super Tuesday is this Tuesday as well, but your primary election. And I mentioned that, you know, a district that has 800,000 people, only 72,000 people showed up for the election. So again, this is where it starts. If you want to have a say so and who represents you, because keep in mind, especially the second district, remember the Supreme Court ruled that it violated the Voting Rights Act. They redesigned that district to now the second district in Alabama is over 48% black representation versus what it was before, where you had a white Republican representing, I think, areas like might have been Pritchett, if I'm not mistaken, in mm-hmm. Congress. But it's been redrawn now. So you have more say so. So let your voice be heard. Make sure you go out there and vote. This episode drops on Monday, so make sure you go out there and vote tomorrow. It's not this sexy election that gets all the national attention like the presidential election. But like Ferg and Rozzy alluded to earlier, it's what matters most, because these are the people that are like in your neighborhood, in your district, up there in D.C. speaking for you. So make your voice heard tomorrow. Make sure you get out there and vote.
Awesome. What you got, Rozzy?
Man, just two things. I open with talking about Megan Thee Stallion. I just want to shout out on the closing. She hosted the Anime Awards. So if you guys don't know, Megan Thee Stallion is a huge anime fan. She's a huge blurt. It's the first time a black person has hosted as well. So that's the other thing about it is it's a big shout out to the blurts out there that really follow anime and everything like that. So good job, Megan. Loving that. So for you. And the other thing is that Wendy's is testing surge pricing. So I don't know if you guys know or not, but that doesn't bode well for your lunch. May actually be more expensive than your 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock meal, because they're going to actually start doing kind of like Uber does. And hey, it's a surge. It's a lot of people coming and the cost is more expensive for that. So be ready. Hope that it fails. But if not, other companies may roll out that same type of thing and actually have surge pricing and different prices based on the time of day.
Is it going to, if your lunch is more expensive, is the 3 o'clock late lunch is going to be cheaper?
No, so it'll be kind of the normal price. And then it'll go up.
Yeah, I hope they fail.
Yeah, it'll go up during because our surge
times. That's a danger. It's a dangerous precedent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, mine isn't much. My last thing is really quick. I want to say congratulations, LeBron James, for reaching 40,000 points, the first player ever to reach that mark. I don't think it's ever going to be beat, or no time in the near future will it be touched. And I want to urge people to relax. This is such an American thing that we are so nitpicky and judgmental, as I judge you guys, that we can't stop and just recognize greatness. I don't care where he falls on your GOAT conversations, top five, top 10, top 25. You have to recognize this dude has done some things that have never been done before. Will probably not. He is a once in a lifetime talent that most of us will never see again. Relax, stop the debate, enjoy the greatness. It won't be here too much longer. I don't know if anybody's ever going to do 40,000 again. We have become so judgmental that we find a way to attack everything. And we have this tribe mentality where we jump on everything. Just let that man live and be great and enjoy the ride. So congrats to 40,000. LeBron, if you want to come on the show and talk about it, I got you. And with that being said, you know, this is it. Three Brothers No Sense, your favorite barbershop style podcast. Six Rules of Podcast. Listen, like, share, subscribe, comment, and most importantly, listen again. Talk to you next week.